A large part of your first book is devoted to the efforts of Hugh Panassier, a jazz aficionado who took it upon himself to publicize Le Hot Jazz and to educate his fellow Frenchmen about the intricacies of this new musical form. He even created the Hot Club de France. I found this to be a typically French reaction, which is to say the need, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, but the need to bring art and artists into institutional frameworks and organizations. Artists are often part of a collective in France. Even members of the avant-garde feel compelled to form groups.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that is interesting, and I actually hadn't really thought about it quite that way, but I think you're right. That there is something very French about that sort of response, like form a club.
Right, literally a club, yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, there were similar kinds of jazz clubs in this country, too, and I think they were trying to sort of connect up a little bit. You know, I talk about that International Federation of Hot Clubs that they try to sort of get going, this transatlantic association, which, as far as I could tell, never came to anything.
The transatlantic thing never came to much,
this International Federation of Hot Clubs. You know, they talked about it. There was some discussion of it in the magazine Jazz Hot, and you know, Marshall Stearns, who's a big jazz critic in this country, who founded the Institute for Jazz Studies. He was the sort of the American connection, and they were supposed to create this international network of these clubs, and they only, so far as I could tell, they only talked about it on paper. It never really became anything.
But regarding the Hot Club, I mean, I thought it was typically French that he not only tried to create an institution to preserve and promulgate hot jazz, but in addition, he really had a pedagogical aspect to his work. You know, trying to show people how to think about this particular form and how to assimilate it psychologically and so on.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true, and some of that may have just been because you know, there were still so many people who just didn't understand like what this was supposed to be. You know, that's why I tried to talk about in the first part of the book, you know, the responses to jazz. And for some people, it's brilliant and amazing, and they love it, and it's dance music, and it's fun. And other people are like, this is the end of the world.
Right.
You know, this weird sound is just it's the primitive jungles of Africa, or it's just some weird thing from outer space, or we don't know what to make of this. And I think, again, that was the case to some extent in this country, too. You know, jazz was very controversial. In the 20s, a lot of people were like, you know, this is devil music, this is black music, this is, you know, all the sort of weird associations that people brought to that and said, we don't know what this means. But I think in the French context, it was even more outlandish because it was coming from another country. It was coming from outside of France. And it was seen as something that was, you know, doubly foreign because it was American, it was black, it was, you know, it was not from within. And so there's really no frame of reference then to understand what that's about. And so I think Panassier and Delaunay and others in the Hot Club and in that whole scene, you know, kind of felt like they had to do some some teaching early on to say, no, this is, you know, we can appreciate this too. We can perform this music too.
And they were successful to some extent.
I think they were. I think, you know, when... It's still the number of jazz fans, as far as one can measure, is still relatively small. Up until really, I'd say, after World War II, that's really when you see the big explosion. But I think you couldn't have gotten to that point without those guys in the 20s and 30s, who were like Panassier and Delaunay, who were really sort of building the groundwork for that and sort of making it okay, you know, to listen and to play. And so in that sense, I think they were successful at their teaching, what they were trying to do.
And, you know, as I previously mentioned, I feel that there is a real collective fear of anything spontaneous in France, and that the dominant cultural consciousness is still that of a logical, rational Cartesianism. And it occurred to me today that the whole notion of jazz improvisation flies directly in the face of that, and for many, it must have been viewed as something, as you say, almost satanic.
Yeah.
You know, and you also talk about how the same adjectives that we use to attack jazz by critics were also used to extol it. You know, for example, the brutal force and the sounds, the dancers who were, quote, elevated, hypnotized, driven mad. I found this quite interesting and ironic, and it suggests that there's two fundamentally different human temperaments at work here, each experiencing the same thing in a completely different manner.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's right, and I think it really does sort of come, you know, which side are you coming at it from? You know, are you someone, and some of this is generational, perhaps, or other things, but, you know, are you kind of the traditionalist who wants everything to remain the same, or are you open to some new, you know, avant-garde kind of idea, you know? And the people who are open, and there were, of course, plenty of people in Paris who were in the 20s who were open to new avant-garde kinds of things, you know, we're looking at this and saying, wow, this is amazing stuff. And then the people who, you know, who were looking at any kind of avant-garde thing, whether it was jazz or whether it was, you know, some kind of new art form or new literary or new other kind of musical, you know, people who were listening to Stravinsky and saying, this is horrible, you know, and walking out, you know, they're the same people who are walking out of jazz, you know, or not going to jazz performances because it was not traditional music. And so I think it kind of depends on which side of that divide that you're on.
So you could say it epitomizes two diametrically opposed tendencies in France. On the one hand, why do something differently if we've always done it this way before? And on the other, an enduring need to be at the service of culture, which necessitates an openness to innovation and change.
Yeah, no, I think that definitely makes sense. And there were, like I said, there were clearly, in the 1920s especially, there were lots of people who were interested in something new and innovative, you know, you're right. I mean, there's always this tension in France and in Paris in particular. You know, Paris wants to be the capital of art, innovation, culture, and so much of that is about the new, right? Coming up with something that's shocking, even, right? You know, Dadaism, or, you know, something that is sort of in your face. But then at the same time, there is that kind of deep-seated, you know, desire to link back with tradition and see how this fits into the broader, you know, deeper flow of tradition. And that may not necessarily be uniquely French. I think it's probably something that's a broader, you know, you find expressions of that in other cultures as well, including in this country too. But it is something that you see very much kind of the duality there, the tension between those two things really comes to the fore in a place like Paris, because I think there were so many people who were doing and interested in doing shocking avant-garde things in the 20s, and so many people then who were at that same moment pushing back against that. So there's really kind of a culture war, I think, that's happening in the 20s in Paris, and I think that's why jazz becomes kind of a touchstone, because it's, you know, it's the thing that shocks, it's one of the many things that shocks people. And if you want to be shocked, then you're drawn to it. And if you don't want to be shocked, then you push back against it with all your might. And some of that is about the post-war period. You know, you're coming out of the trenches, you're coming out of the experience of the war, and the culture has undergone this tremendous upheaval anyway. And that for a lot of people, they want nothing more than just sort of a return to sanity. And there's this whole artistic movement, the rappel à l'ordre, the return to order, you know, the return to orderly things. And so there are a lot of people, even in the artistic community, who say we need to get back to, you know, back to basics and forget all this kind of craziness. But then there are plenty of other people who say, no, let's push forward. You know, the old culture is dead. The war proves it. And now let's try something new. We have to reinvent ourselves in this moment.
Of course, the ironic thing is that the great avant-garde artist is actually always working through tradition and forging a new link to a long chain in tradition, but very few people can actually see that, particularly when it's first manifesting, the new form is first manifesting.
Right, and I think that's true. And there were people who were then trying to understand jazz within that tradition, even though it was coming, you know, there were a lot of people who said, well, you know, jazz has its own tradition. That is a tradition that's linked back to Africa, and they sort of saw it explicitly in racial terms, and that this was the expression of blackness as musical form. But there were other people who were trying to say, okay, but this is also music, and we can understand this in the context of the history of musical traditions. And so maybe there are ways that we can even understand it, you know, even though it's coming from outside, we can still think about it as how it fits within the idea of musical tradition. Because, for instance, the notion of syncopation is not something that jazz invents. You know? It's an older, it's a traditional musical, you know, technique. And so, you know, there were composers and other people who were trying to think about that, and just connect jazz, this avant-garde form, into the deeper tradition, just like you were saying.
And then after jazz gained greater acceptance in France, it became, you write, a, quote, a symbol for what it meant to be French in the interwar years. I thought that was interesting. Maybe you could expand on that.
Yeah, I think that it becomes, let me put it this way, that one of the things that I was interested in that book was not so much writing about jazz per se, but writing about the reception of jazz. I was really more interested in audiences than in performers to some extent, because what I wanted to know was what happened when people heard this music. And what did they say? What did they do? What did they think about that? And I think that's kind of where this plugs into this question about French identity and tradition and culture, that jazz provides a language or provides an opportunity for people to debate those questions about what it means to be French. Can it be, you know, is it French to accept an artistic musical form that comes from some other part of the world and to bring it into our tradition and have French musicians who perform it and play it as well as the people who created it?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it more French to see this as an outside thing and push it away? And, you know, I think what I was trying to think about there then was that what you see is in the response, I think, to jazz in the 20s and 30s, is that debate going on. You know, what does it mean to be French? What is the definition of Frenchness? Is it openness to new things, or is it this kind of conservative, traditionalist kind of vision? And where does that debate go with jazz sort of as the excuse, or not the excuse, but the jazz is the thing that, you know, we're talking about jazz, but really we're talking about these other issues.
It's really almost like a Rorschach test.
Yeah.
Jazz is a Rorschach test. You know,
yeah.
That's very interesting, Jeff. How would you define hot jazz? I mean, is it synonymous with jazz improvisation? Jazz improv?
Hot jazz really sort of refers to that kind of, that 20s era, sometimes referred to as Dixieland jazz. It's that kind of early jazz that is very much about improvisation and spontaneity. Often it was a sort of collective improvisation early on.
Where they pass the instrument from one guy to the next in the band, or each one takes a turn on his instrument.
That's part of it, or just that kind of the sense that the group is...
as a whole improvising.
Improvising sort of on the theme. And it's sort of, out of that then comes the sort of, when you have sort of the big name people like Louis Armstrong, who sort of become the soloist doing that kind of improvisation. And it's all the same thing, it's all related, but it's kind of that, you know, it's that sort of 20s era. But the thing that for Panassier that was crucial was the fact that you had to have that kind of spontaneous improvisation. I mean, he
otherwise you were banned by Panassier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
He sounds like a character.
I think he was quite a character, probably. The way he put it, he has this quote, I don't know why it always sticks in my brain. He says something like, you know, where there is no swing, there is no authentic jazz.
Right.
And so the music has to swing, and for him that means it has to be rooted in this kind of, in this improvisational expression. And here he was really talking about, you know, what he talked about as real jazz, which is the music of the New Orleans players, Armstrong and others, versus that kind of orchestral jazz, you know, the stuff that people...
Like Whitehead?
Yeah, like Paul Whiteman and...
Whiteman. I called him Whitehead. That's an interesting slip.
Well, it's close enough. and Jack Hylton and others who had really kind of, you know, they'd orchestrated it and scored it, and there was really no need or room for improvisation. So for Panassier, it really is about, you know, it's not just sort of pretty band music, but there's something kind of live and in the moment that's where the hotness comes from.
Show, as they say. Say show. What led to the creation of that book? Are you also a jazz aficionado, or was it more coming out of what you were previously talking about, using jazz as a kind of Rorschach test to define other aspects of French culture?
Yeah, I mean, a little of both. I mean, I'm not an aficionado. I'm an enthusiastic amateur,
okay.
I guess, when it comes to jazz, because I'm not a musician myself or anything like that. That, you know, like I said, that book was my dissertation originally,
right.
And the way that came about was that I really started with the time period. I wanted to do something on the interwar period because I'd always found that a fascinating era, and wanted to do something in that. And I remember in graduate school, I remember saying to myself, well, I know I've heard something about jazz and Paris, you know, and maybe I could look into that a little bit and see what was there. And that's when I began to, and it really started out as a seminar paper in one of my classes.
Right.
And I found that really very little had been written, and that's kind of the light bulb went on over my head, and I said, well, since I'm interested in this time period and not a lot's been written about this, and as somebody who appreciated jazz and was interested, you know, and listened to jazz, I was attracted to it for that reason, too. The other reason that it made sense to pursue it also was that I went to graduate school at the University of Rochester, and Rochester, part of the University of Rochester is the Eastman School of Music, which is, you know, Eastman and Juilliard are sort of the two preeminent music schools in this country.
Oh.
And so Eastman, if you mention Eastman School of Music to anybody who's in the music world, they'll know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Harvard and Yale, you know, it's like they're the top, Eastman and Juilliard. And so I knew that I would have access to an amazing music library, which I did, as well as the faculty at Eastman who could also give me their insights. So I kind of thought, you know, doing a musical project, even though I'm not a musician, I'm surrounded by musicians, and I have access to those kind of resources, and so it just kind of all made sense to work on that.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And I felt like it really came together, too. I mean, I was very proud of that book.
No, that's wonderful. Hold on just one second.